Welcome to The Fighting Priests, a podcast exploring orthodoxy and jiu-jitsu. Two paths, one struggle. Father Ted Paraskevopoulos and Father Thomas Sandberg are two orthodox Christian priests who also happen to be practitioners of jiu-jitsu. Together, they explore how these two unique worlds intersect and what it means for our spirituality. Here's Father Ted and Father Thomas. Welcome, everybody, back to The Fighting Priests. I'm your host, Father Ted Paraskevopoulos, here in Toronto, with my co-host, Father Thomas Sandberg, up in Niverville, Manitoba. Father Thomas, how's it going?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm okay. Today, we are really blessed because we have a very special guest, again, from the United States. We've had a few already, but never anybody from Kentucky. We have Father Jason Blaze, who is an Orthodox priest, in Bowling Green, Kentucky, if I'm saying it correctly. And he is on with us today talking about our topic, which is one-on-one, BJJ, and introverts, which is a really interesting topic that we've kind of been thinking about for a while. I know Father Thomas had mentioned in a couple of episodes ago that, you know, he's a natural introvert. He likes time alone and hiking and being generally away from people, and also how BJJ has kind of like changed his life a little bit in that sense. And Father Jason, you know, I welcome you to our show. And as another introvert, as you have told me online, as we've been discussing, we look forward to exploring this topic with you. Welcome.
Great. Thanks for having me.
How's everything down in Kentucky, in Bowling Green?
Very good. You know, of course, we're still kind of dealing with the pandemic, and it's kind of affected everybody's life. And so here in church, we have really limited attendance. And so people are having to sign up online if they want to come to church. And we only have room for about 20 people, including altar servers, just because we have to maintain social distancing. Parish is a little bit smaller. And so because it's smaller, in order to keep everyone in there and maintain social distancing, we can't put as many people in there. So yeah, you know, we're adjusting. And then of course the children's schedule. I have two children, a son, Luke, who's 9, a daughter, Abigail, who's 12. And so they're home 3 days a week doing distance learning, and then they're going to school. My wife's a public school teacher. Mm-hmm. So she's gone 5 days a week. And so 3 of those days during the week, I'm trying to fit in training and I'm trying to fit in exercising on top of all of my priestly responsibilities, which is challenging, especially in these current circumstances.
Sure. In the church well, you mentioned it's only about 20 people, but is there, does the state have a capacity rule, or is it like a number rule as far as how many can go in?
Really, as long as we're able to maintain social distancing, the capacity isn't really limited, but our metropolitan has kind of asked that we are able to maintain social distancing in our churches. And so that's affected the number of people that we can put in. So we would put in as many as we could. It's just hard to have the social distancing also.
Sure.
So it's difficult. You know, people have been kind of interrupted in their liturgical life and their sacramental life. And, you know, as one parishioner kind of eloquently told me, it's difficult being a shepherd when you feel like all of your sheep are out of the barn. And so they're kind of all over the place and really trying to, you know, you worry about people, but it's a lot easier when you see people regularly week after week to check in on people. Now it seems like everybody's kind of in a state of crisis to varying degrees. So it's been a real challenge for parishioners, I think.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. We're experiencing the same thing here. For us, at least here in Ontario, which is our province, it's 30% capacity in the churches. So of course that's different for every church, but that does maintain social distancing in most churches. So for our church, for my church, St. Constant Helen here in Toronto, that means approximately 90 people, right? 100 people plus, like, so 90 plus staff, right? For other churches, it could be more. Other churches, like you said, smaller ones could be less, right? So yeah. Yeah. It's somebody asked me, you know, recently, like, Father, what is it like, you know, serving with all these restrictions? Cause you know, here we also have like a bylaw in Toronto that we have to wear masks, right? Mm-hmm. Like the priest being far away up on the Soledad doesn't have to, but like, you know, everybody else does. And it's a whole thing. Up in Manitoba where Thomas is with Father Thomas's, they are now implementing, I think, masks as well. I think they have a bylaw now. They didn't have it before, but numbers went up. So they kind of regressed. And so somebody said, what's it like serving? And I'm like, it's like serving handcuffed. That's what it feels like, because you have all these restrictions on you. So you have all this stress while you're serving the divine liturgy. You, like, you have in the back of your mind, making sure that it, kind of everybody is following the rules. You can't just relax, right?
Yeah, well, it's something as simple as a visitor who shows up on a Sunday kind of unannounced is like an all hands on deck situation, because we had someone come in the middle of liturgy this past week who was looking for some financial assistance. They weren't a parishioner, but they were just looking for some benevolence. And so, you know, having to deal with that situation and like how we interact with him and all of that is just very difficult to navigate.
Sure. And Father Thomas, I think because some of the numbers came up, like it went up in Manitoba, like are there any new restrictions that have been implemented at the church there, at St. Demetrius in Winnipeg?
I don't know. Father Nick texted me something yesterday. It's only for the, it'll affect the church. It's the mandate or whatever they announced for Code Orange. I think the province is in Code Orange. And so the Winnipeg metropolitan region has some, you have to wear masks and gatherings of 10 people and stuff like that. Right. So that's where I am in Niverville. That's considered part of Winnipeg metropolitan region or whatever, but I was at my mom and stepdad's house yesterday and none of those rules apply there where they live around Steinbeck. So
and Father Jason, how's the jiu-jitsu scene down there in Kentucky? Like are the clubs still open? Are people rolling? What's going on?
Yeah, we're training. In fact, in the middle of the lockdown, our academy opened a new location, which is it's actually very, very nice. It was a CrossFit gym at one time, and then it's been kind of just updated. And they ended up, the gym that was in there before moved out, and so they remodeled, and we have like a lot more mat space and a bigger area for lockers, and we have the cage in there as well because it's an MMA gym that I'm in.
Sure.
And so there's, you know, I mean, it was a little nerve-wracking coming back to training, I think, because, you know, I had every intention to drill diligently during the pandemic, but I didn't drill as much as I would have liked, and so it was a little nerve-wracking stepping back on the mats. But and we're training with smaller groups of people. Everyone's being cautious, and we're washing our hands before we get on the mat and taking temperatures before we get there, and so we're not letting people train who are sick. But it's always kind of in the back of your mind. It's something that you're always kind of thinking about. But at the end of the day, I mean, I really feel like jiu-jitsu is almost therapeutic for me, and so I almost, you know, without the ability to train, you know, I get a little squirrely. So it's nice to be able to be on the mats and just, you know, we had a really tough training session a couple of weeks ago. We did belt promotions. And so, you know, everyone was out there and we were all training and going pretty hard. And like, I just left with such a happy feeling, you know. It was one of those classes where you just got smashed, but it was a great session to be able there to be there and to do that. And so, you know, I think as cautious as we can be and to try and go on with our lives as much as possible, but, you know, still exercising that caution.
Sure. And speaking of belts, what is your degree as far as like, what belt are you? Any kind of degrees for jiu-jitsu? Because we never asked you before.
Yeah, I'm a 3-stripe blue belt. So I've been training about 4 years now. So I'm kind of, I'm starting to understand a little bit more about positions and game plans and, you know, adjusting attacks to get responses. And so it's getting to be kind of fun, but it's also getting to be frustrating because, I'm 43, so my body doesn't work like I'd like it to. So. Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah, you know, it's So you've been a fun 4 years.
You started at the same time as I did. I'm 39 now.
Okay.
And actually 38 when I started. I'm almost coming up to a year. But like, yeah, so you started late, just like me.
Yeah.
Father Thomas. Yeah,
I always wanted to train, but my grandfather was a judo player. He had a judo academy when my mom was growing up and also taught karate. And so, you know, there's pictures of my mom and my uncle in gis when they're little kids, you know, but I just never, for whatever reason, never was really able to train. And kind of always, you know, I mean, I'm a fan of the UFC. And so, you know, I've always kind of been aware of jiu-jitsu and just never really had a place where I could train or a time that I could train or finances, because sometimes it's, you know, it's expensive to train.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And do your kids train at all?
My wife trains kickboxing. My son used to train. He trained Japanese jiu-jitsu first. That was kind of the gateway. And then I really just wasn't too satisfied with what he was learning there. You know, it was good, but it's just a lot of like, I didn't feel like real practical in terms of, sparring. And so I ended up taking him to, the BJJ school that I go to now, Hicks Mixed Martial Arts. And so I kind of started taking him after I started training. So he was at this Japanese jiu-jitsu school, and then I started training BJJ, and then I brought him over there. But he's kind of at an age where I think it was not maybe as fun as he was hoping it was going to be. And so I'm hoping that someday he gets back to it. I don't want to push him too much, you know. I think especially as a priest kid, there's a lot of like expectations sometimes placed on my son. And so I'd like him to at least feel like he's, you know, having fun at what he's doing. And at least if I can give him that introduction, then I hope he goes back to it eventually. My daughter, she maybe wants to start training kickboxing. She's 12. So we'll see.
Nice. Very nice.
Thanks for being here, Father Jason, with us. This is an interesting topic because I usually consider myself an introvert as well. So it was actually interesting when I had my psychological assessment for becoming a priest. When I think one of the sessions I had with her, and she came back and she asked me about that, because I guess some of the questions I answered with pencil, and then when I spoke to her, I guess it came out that I was more sociable than what I would say myself. But it's like, I don't know. I don't know if it's the same thing to be introverted or if you like spending time alone. I don't know if those things are synonymous necessarily. But what do you think that it means to be an introvert?
Well, you know, a lot of times people associate being an introvert with being shy. And yeah. So they think that if someone's introverted, that they get nervous around people, or maybe they are awkward in social situations. But really, introversion versus extroversion, and it's really a spectrum, and people are somewhere on that spectrum. And it's about 50% of the population is actually introvert, and about 50% of the population is actually extrovert. And what that means is where people recharge their batteries, I guess, for the, you know, kind of an easy way to put it. And so you might think of like that individual who they're at a party, they're the life of a party, and they enjoy meeting all the people at the party, they know all their names, and when they leave that party, they're ready to go to another party. They're like energized by it. And so social interactions are really engaging for them. Introverts, we like people as much as extroverts do, and we're not shy. I mean, people who are shy, really, I think there's a fear that people are not going to accept them, and so they want to be around people, but they're afraid that you know, people are not going to accept them for who they are. Introverts, really, we like being around people, but we just get tired by it. And so for me, it's like coffee hour. I take that as an example. I love coffee hour. It's fantastic. But when I leave coffee hour, I'm drained. I've served liturgy. I go to coffee hour. I interact with all these parishioners. I hear all kinds of stories. Maybe I have to deal with some kind of pastoral issue. And so when I go home, I'm tired. You know, I don't get energized in social situations. But it's funny because in our culture, we really have this ideal of what we think is a good trait to have. And we really look at extroversion, which is people who get their energy from social situations. We really look at that as the ideal in our culture, even though about half of us don't respond in social situations to that way. And so a lot of times when I tell people I'm an introvert, they say, well, you're a priest. How can you be introverted and still be a priest? And, you know, once again, it's like, I love people. They just make me tired. And that's not a character flaw. It's not a deficiency in my personality. It's really just how I'm wired, how I'm hardwired in my brain. And there's a difference between, even when they've done studies, between the brain of an introvert and the brain of an extrovert. And introverts tend to have more blood flow and activity in their frontal lobes, which is that part of the brain that deals more with planning and strategy, decision-making, problem-solving, where extroverts have more, they have more brain activity and blood flow in their temporal lobes. And so that's where you have those areas of the brain that respond to sensory and emotional experience. And so, you know, introverts, they get their energy from the interior world. And so while extroverts are, you know, more looking at the outside world, I'm in my head a lot of the times. So, you know, I drive my wife crazy because I can drive past a place in town for years and not even recognize that there's like, you know, what the name of the street is or something like that, you know, because I'm in the zone, you know, and a lot of times I'm in my brain. I'm thinking about things. I'm, you know, arguing with myself over ideas. You know, I mean, I can be very content to be on my own. And so, yeah, it's like I go to the movie theaters by myself and I love it. You know, I love sitting and watching a movie in the movie theater by myself. I get to see what I want to see and eat popcorn. And some people think that's weird, but for me, it's like a great way to be energized. And so it's really just really kind of where you fall on that spectrum. And there's nothing wrong with being an introvert. It's just our society really kind of values extroversion more than introversion.
And if I can just jump in, I think another issue is that people, like you said, people have an expectation of what an introvert is and what an extrovert is. And like you said, it's a spectrum. So some people can exhibit both traits at different times in their lives, or can be maybe mostly an extrovert, but also have introverted tendencies and things like that. I know I have things like that because I would consider myself mostly an extrovert, although I love going to the movies alone as well. I love taking time. Coffee hour exhausts me just as much as it exhausts you, right? But one thing I find that people, you know, kind of put people in boxes. So in the Orthodox Church, for example, we have this idea that, you know, a monastic should be an introvert, contemplative, you know, hesychast, quiet, you know, to themselves. And the priest should be the extrovert because he's the one preaching, right, the one interacting, right? And we see both personalities on both in both paths, right? You have extroverted monastics, right? More charismatics, right? Which people find off-putting sometimes because they're like, aren't you supposed to be quiet and be stuck in a monastery somewhere, right? And then you also have introverted priests as well, right, who are more contemplative and things like that. So, that can create great pressure on the individual, but it can also create misunderstandings. I think, because people have this idea in their head of what a monastic should be, what a priest should be, et cetera, right?
Yeah, and I mean, I almost feel that it's like, for me at least, it's like I get so much data from social situations, you know? So even if I'm like driving in a place I've never driven before and I'm getting all this new input, if I have the radio on, I have to turn it off. You know, it's almost like it's too much for me. And so, you know, I prefer one-on-one conversations. And I am much better at expressing myself through the written word than I am through the spoken word. Now, in terms of homilies, like I feel that that's something that I'm, I feel pretty proficient in homilies, and I don't mind speaking in front of hundreds of people if I have to. But if someone were to tell me to come out and just speak to 500 people without a roadmap of what I had to say, then what happens is I would not do well in that situation, because there'd be too many things that I'm like having to navigate at the time. So, I mean, when I sent you an outline with some of my thoughts, that's because, you know, it was almost like, oh my gosh, what if he asked me something I haven't thought about? You know, then I'm going to stumble over my words and sound dumb. And so I want to make sure that I sound prepared, that I've reflected. And that's something that introverts do, is they are more inclined to reflect and to maybe be a little bit more introspective. But that doesn't mean that extroverts aren't that way. It just means that introverts kind of, that's their mode of operation. They tend to gravitate towards that a little bit more. But, you know, they are good listeners. They usually are people who dislike small talk. And so, yeah, I'm not very good at small talk. My wife is a small talk master, but I'm not, you know, because, and it's not that I don't, it's that I want to have a deep conversation. Like, I want to talk to you about your family, your spiritual life. I want to know if, you know, you're going through a difficult situation. Like, let's talk about that. Let's talk about your family. And so I want to connect much more on a deeper level than just talking about, you know, your new car or something like that. So I've had to learn how to do that, because that's how some people operate. And so it's a skill, learning how to make small talk. But I think that it's not something that comes naturally to me.
Yeah, I'm the same way with the small talk. It's like, let's take it for a jiu-jitsu example. If I'm trying to leave, like, I'm like, oh, I'm going to leave here at this time, I'm going to shower. If someone starts talking to me, it's not going to be for a short period of time, and then it's 30 minutes, 40 minutes later, and then now I'm out the door. So I can see that. It's interesting you said about going to the movies too. It's funny. I like to go for supper by myself.
Oh yeah,
yeah. And some people, pardon?
I said that's a good one too. I do that. Yeah. And
some people, they like, when they find it out, they're like, "What? Like they I could never do that." Or it's like, "What do you do?" You just go and you order food, you read a book.
Yeah.
Sometimes you don't even read. Sometimes you're just like with your thoughts, and you're just reflecting on things, right? So
I tell my wife I have to take myself out on a date. She understands completely. So
yeah, that's what I tell my wife when I gotta go hiking. I like to go into nature, right? I gotta go camping, I gotta go backpacking, gotta reflect on some things. So I can identify with pretty much everything you're saying so far. So I think, how do you challenge yourself to maybe go outside your comfort zone?
Well, you know, the first thing is when we hear that word comfort zone, mm-hmm. at least for me as an introvert, I get a little defensive.
Yeah.
Because what I feel like is it's almost like, oh, well, my comfort zone, like no one's telling an extrovert, like you need to get out of your comfort zone and be like a little bit more quiet or reserved, or go think about things like in the woods. Mm-hmm. It's almost like we have this ideal in our society that like introversion, oh, you know, here in the South, in the United States, we say, you know, bless your heart. And so bless your heart, you know, you're an introvert and like, that must be terrible for you. And so you got to come out of your comfort zone. And really, your comfort zone as an introvert is like where you operate the best. It's like playing to your strengths. And so, even though I'm more inclined to a thoughtful, introspective kind of life, I don't view that as a weakness. You know, I view that as a strength. But in the same way, a lot of times I might be a little bit apprehensive. Like when you all asked me to do this podcast, oh my gosh, I you know, it's nerve wracking for me, you know. One, I'm like, I've never met these priests before, you know. What are they going to be like? What are they going to think about me? Am I going to sound like I don't know what I'm talking about? You know, I feel like I might be making things up. Those are all kind of irrational thoughts. But as an introvert, like those are the kinds of things that you constantly have to deal with. And so my personal strategy is when something makes me uncomfortable, I immediately say yes to it. You know, so my reaction was to say, no, thank you for asking, but I'll just continue to maybe enjoy your podcast on iTunes. But instead, you know, it's like I force myself to do it. You know, I force myself to be disciplined. And really, that's it. You know, a lot of times people say, oh, well, I'm just not disciplined. It's like, well, discipline is a choice that we make.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't want to lift weights today or go do sprints, but I just chose to do it. And like discipline is a habit, and it's the same way in our spiritual life. I mean, how many times do we hear in confession, like, oh, I just haven't prayed, I haven't fasted, you know, like it doesn't come easy to me. It's like, no, it's not supposed to be easy. It's supposed to be difficult, but it's only when we do things that are difficult that we see any kind of growth in our life, spiritual, physical, intellectual. Like college is hard, but that's why we go. It's hard to fast, but that's why we get the benefit of these ascetical practices that the church gives us.
You just do it, not to rip off the Nikes. You know.
Yeah.
Actually, what you're saying, Father, you know, you're saying like, I my inclination is say yes to it. It reminds me of that movie, Yes Man, with Jim Carrey. Have you seen that?
Yes.
It's a comedy. It's hilarious. I liked it. And, you know, he's kind of a person. He says no to everything. And then he goes to the seminar and then he starts saying yes to everything. And it's like, you know, obviously antics ensue, right? But it's true though, that it's people come to me too. And they say, Father, you know, like, how do you pray? Like, you know, regimented or, you know, have a rule of prayer. I'm like, you just do it. It's like, oh, that sounds pretty simplistic. I'm like, yeah. Cause there's no, isn't there a trick or a secret? I'm like, no, it's just strength of will. You just have to like,
it doesn't come any easier for you.
Sorry?
You know, I mean, it just because you're the priest, it doesn't mean that prayer is any easier for you.
Yeah,
exactly. You know, I've had parishioners before, and I mean, not to scandalize anyone, but I've told them, I said, you know, sometimes I'm coming to church on a Sunday morning and I see someone, you know, going to the lake with their boat, you know, being towed behind their truck. And I think, wow, I wish I could go to the lake on a Sunday morning. And, but I make the decision to come to church. I mean, there's not every single service that I start off wanting to be there. By the end of the service, I'm so grateful that I had the opportunity to serve God and his people. But it's difficult. Like, you know, life is difficult. We're made to struggle. And so that's what I love about jiu-jitsu is it creates an opportunity for you to like constantly put yourself in struggle and to grow and to change.
Yeah. And I find you'll see this, everyone posts about this pretty much, whether introvert or extrovert, it's just those training sessions that you don't want to do, those days that then you make yourself do them. Those like turn out to be some of the best training sessions or maybe the best day of your week, or it's just something that you really, really needed.
Well, Father Jason, you know, you brought up, you know, jiu-jitsu and how it kind of gives us the opportunity to grow and to challenge us, just like we were speaking about in the last segment. And I had a question for you. I was listening to you speak a few minutes ago. And, you know, when you said that you feel comfortable on one-on-one conversations more so than kind of speaking to a large group, or you can speak to a large group, but it has to be kind of prepared and things like that. Well, how does that, my question is for you is how does that translate to the mats, right? Because jiu-jitsu can be both a very personal thing because you're alone, right? Like it's just you and the opponent, right? But at the same time, you know, you're also faced with a myriad of challenges and problem solving in real time, all like really quickly. And so you kind of have this paradox happening, right? Where it's yes, it's not a team sport. It's an individualistic sport, which is great for introverts, right? But at the same time, you are dealing with another person in a very kind of like, what's the word? They're in your face, right? When you're rolling, right? So how does that translate? Like for you, how does that work? Like, does it work for you or against you? Do you find it challenging? Do you find it that it builds you up? It helps you. Yeah.
Well, I think what I, you know, as an introvert, maybe I'm kind of more inclined to like be a little bit more thoughtful about something, you know, when I say thoughtful, like think about it a little bit more. And so, you know, sometimes I'm like, I'm sure that my coach is kind of annoyed at some of the questions I ask because I feel like I understand a position a lot better if I understand like, well, in what circumstance might I find myself in this position? Like we were working a sweep from half guard the other day and we were winding up in the dogfight position. And then it was kind of like, well, when would I see this particular response? And it's like, for me, it's not enough to just like learn the technique, but I feel like I do the technique better when I have all the pieces that kind of go around it. And so it can be kind of, you know, frustrating for me because I find myself, I have to be a lot quicker with being able to make those decisions and to make the right decisions. And so it forces me to make stressful decisions quickly so as to not get injured or to injure somebody else. You know, all that's very important. And so I don't know if that answered your question or not.
Well, yeah, kind of. Like it definitely tells me about how it challenges you to become better, where you know, in the areas where you would consider yourself to be weak, right? Everybody has weak points and strengths. Yeah, I would agree with you. Like the decision making or in a split second is one of the things that, you know, I never even, you know, of course we deal with in the parish, but in the parish, okay, even in emergencies, we have a lot more time to think things through, right? Sure. And we can also dictate the time frame. As a priest, you know, we can slow things down, we can set up a meeting, we can, even when you're getting called to go to an emergency hospital or something, or there's somebody's in distress, you have some time to think about it even on the way, on the drive there, right? It's not in your face, like in the moment. So I found that very difficult, especially at the beginning, especially rolling for myself, where your brain just goes blank. You don't know. You forgot everything you just learned. I know this is very common, of course, for everybody who just starts jiu-jitsu, but you know, everything you just learned in the technique part of the class, right? It's out the window because you know, your brain just kind of goes blank. You don't know how to access that information because you haven't been accustomed to kind of, I always think of it as, you know, bringing order out of chaos, right? Because when you're rolling with somebody, you start rolling, it's chaos and you're trying to create order by, you know, by figuring out the way to move around that person, right? And to get what you need to do, right?
Yeah. And as a, you know, it's difficult because I've been at my school for 4 years now. And so I wouldn't say that I'm like, I'm not a new guy anymore, you know? And then of course I have a blue belt. And so, you know, white belts want to kill me, especially when they get some techniques, you know? So, you kind of have to deal with being in a situation, at least for me, where I kind of have to handle these situations very, very quickly on the fly. And so it's good for me because it forces me to, you know, sometimes I can be too choosy with my training partners, who I want to roll with, you know, and I don't want to roll with the big blue belt who's gonna, you know, mount me and smash me and Ezekiel choke me every single time we roll, you know, and where you get frustrated that don't you have other techniques that you can use. And so I have to like force myself to, you know, when I go into a training session, I say, okay, I'm gonna roll 5 rounds, 6 rounds, and I'm going to go with like an upper belt. I'm going to go with the new guy. I'm going to go with someone around my skill level, maybe someone a little bit better, you know, and to try and really be strategic with how I train. And that's the same thing that we need to do with our spiritual life, is to be strategic. You know, I tell people before Great Lent, like, come up with a plan. You know, how is it that you're going to approach the Lenten season? And it's the same thing with a role. Like, if you go into a role with no plan, it is going to be chaos, you know? But it, and so I have a strategy where I'll find, you know, one technique. And I say, okay, this week I'm going to work on, you know, a fake scissor sweep to a triangle. And then that's what I'm going to try to do to everyone. You know, black belt, brown belt, purple belt, whoever it is, I'm going to try to do it. And get really good at one thing. And I feel like that's just, I mean, that's great advice for life. Like, so often, how often do we hear where people come in and, you know, they give us a list of all these things in their life that they'd like to change. And I really just feel like if we would just pick one thing and dedicate ourselves fully to trying to change one thing in our life, what kind of growth would we experience if we just did that every 30 days, just picked a new thing that we tried to master? And that could be in our spiritual life. That could be in our family life, that could be in our financial life. And so it's easy to kind of get lost and not see the forest through the trees, but jiu-jitsu really forces you to kind of like set priorities and attend to those priorities in your life, at least for me.
Yeah, Father, I agree with you. Like the idea of, picking one thing or picking, you know, a few things that we can actually work on, as opposed to like the big picture, right? Because, you know, everybody likes to look at the big picture. They think about like the end of the marathon, but they don't think about like, you know, the kilometer by kilometer that they got to do. You know, they got to just focus on what's in front of you and eventually you'll get there. So, you know, kind of just picking smaller, challenges and just kind of getting achievements, smaller achievements every day is a good way of getting to your final goals, right? You know, the ultimate goal of any ultimate goals in life seem overwhelming, right? So it's good to kind of make smaller goals. So I agree with you, like the idea of like practicing one technique or a couple of techniques and just do that for a couple of weeks. And then when you feel that you've gotten proficient at it, then you move on to something else. It's irrelevant whether you win or not, or whether you submit or get submitted. The point is that you're just practicing the same move over and over again. But when you actually get it, there's this kind of feeling of not only it's a good feeling of success and of accomplishment, but then also you have this kind of feeling of competence. That's the word I was looking for. Like this, and in spiritual life, it's the same thing. Like being competent in different aspects of the spiritual life, I think is something that's sorely lacking amongst our people. Like who actually says, "Hey, Father, I'm actually quite competent in prayer." You know, I'm actually quite competent in fasting with my family. Nobody says that to me. Everyone's like, oh, it's crazy. I'm trying to fast. My kids are not fasting. My wife doesn't want to do it like this. It's crazy. We don't have a plan. It's just so bad. And then we move on, right? It's like, well, why don't you just choose one little thing to do? And then try doing that. And you know, when it comes to jiu-jitsu, that's what I really like about it. That, you know, you are, we've said this in previous episodes as well. It's measurable, you know, your progress is measurable. You know, you can either know how to do a scissor sweep, like you said, right? Or you don't, right? You either know like an Americana or you don't, right? You know how to execute it or you don't, right? And also that's awarded or rewarded, you know, by your instructor, your sensei. You know, it's, you either can do it and you go to grading and you can either do it or you don't, right? You either get the stripe or you don't. You either get the belt promotion or you don't. And it's based on your competence, on what you can actually do. And so few things in life right now are based on competence.
Sure.
Yeah. And it's just, I don't know. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that. That's my little rant.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things I love about jiu-jitsu is that it's a meritocracy. You know, what is valued there is skill, your competency. And so, you know, I mean, it's hard. I remember the first time I walked into my school and, you know, I was just destroyed, like daily. It was just a humiliating experience, you know, and I had done CrossFit and I thought I was strong and I thought that meant something. And then like young guys just like, you know, tying me up like a pretzel who were, you know, far smaller than me. But at least in the academy, it's like the hierarchy of who is alpha and who is not is very, very clear. And I love that because, you know, especially as a priest, you know, there's people who will defer to me simply because I'm a priest. You know, Father knows best. And so there's this power differential between you and parishioners. And you know, and not always. Sometimes people are going to tell you they disagree or you're wrong. But then sometimes there's going to be people that will just defer to your judgment. And so there's always kind of this interaction where you're the father. And at least in the jiu-jitsu school, for myself, like when I first started going, I never even told anyone I was a priest. You know, I mean, I kept it kind of, I deliberately kept it quiet. Not that I'm ashamed of being a priest or anything like that, but I had to have a place where I could go and just be Jason instead of Father Jason. And so now I've gotten to a point where, you know, I've started to kind of, train longer and, I'm kind of going up the pecking order. I mean, the other day in class, I was like the highest ranking belt at the class, which is a weird feeling when there's a ton of white belts behind you and, you know, some other blue belts that you're ahead of. And you start to think like, wow, I've been doing this for a while, you know, and it's, and so it's just very clear to me. And I like the idea that, at the end of the day, I mean, someone who's smaller and has better technique is still going to be able to be higher up the food chain. You know, I mean, really what matters is mastery of the technique, you know, mastery of the art. And it doesn't really matter. Nobody cares. You know, we have people who come in there and, you know, nobody cares that they're a lawyer or a doctor or what title they have. It's like, can you tap me out? You know, and there's something kind of pure and beautiful about that, at least, you know, from a purely artistic standpoint as a martial artist.
Yeah, there's no pretense in jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
There's no, like you said, there's no titles. You mentioned, you know, in the parish, it is a problem because, yeah, like a lot of people would be shy or they don't want to insult the priest or, they respect the title or they respect the position. Of course, that can be a good thing, but can also be a bad thing because as far as us, we as priests growing and becoming better, you know, you need constructive criticism with love, of course, right? And that can be totally lacking in the parish because people would rather, you know, either not say anything or talk behind the priest's back or whatever it is because they don't want to actually offend the priest. That doesn't help the priest. But in jiu-jitsu, you don't have any of that. It's like everybody's on the mats. And yeah, that's amazing. I agree with you. Like nobody calls me Father Ted. Him, like they know, like most people know that I'm a priest, but nobody feels a need to call me that, nor do I flaunt it, nor do I speak about it.
Like we've had guys from the gym come for Agape Vespers picnic, you know, guys who are fighters and like they've probably never been to an Orthodox church before. But you know, they come and then they see, well, gosh, you know, Jason's up there, he's Father Jason, and he's wearing vestments, and what is this all about? And you know, to me, I really view, the academy as like, it's a mission field of sorts, you know, it's an opportunity for me to share, my faith in a way that, is kind of unusual with people that I might not normally interact with. And so, you know, I've prayed for people at the academy. They've asked me to pray. They've come and asked for my advice, but I feel like I've never had to solicit it. I've never volunteered my services to anyone. You know, I have blessed my academy during theophany, And so, you know, and that's like, that was a, to me, like a real highlight of being able to do something like that. You know, these are God's people and he loves them too. And so it's an opportunity for me to, I really do view like every role as an opportunity for me to like, to exercise perfection. You know, it's the same way, like when we serve the liturgy, like we want to do it perfectly, not because we think God will be displeased with the fact that we didn't, but because it's a reflection of the kingdom of God. And so every role is also another opportunity for us to reflect that perfection of the kingdom of heaven, you know? And I mean, whether or not people are going to agree with that statement or not, I really feel like it's a physical way that we get to express our faith and learn about ourselves. And, you know, sometimes I learn things about myself during a role that I don't like. I think, man, gosh, I got mad when that guy went for that guillotine and I did not like that. Or, you know, this guy that I thought I was better than got the better of me. And then when we slapped hands and I went after him, you know, because I was going to show him that I'm boss. And so I don't like being humiliated or, you know, I mean, all these things that you learn that it's like, that's just life. Like you have an opportunity to learn so much about your life if you have the eyes to see and the ears to hear. And jujitsu is just another way for me that I can kind of explore that space in a physical way.
Well, thank you, Father, for that. So, you know, we're wrapping up today on our topic of one-on-one introverts and BJJ, and with our guest, Father Jason Blaze from Bowling Green, Kentucky. I don't know, final thoughts, everyone. We've had a really great conversation. I think our listeners can take away a lot. And I think myself, listening to you, Father Jason, I'm starting to think that maybe I'm more of an introvert than I am of an extrovert. Or maybe, you know, because society values extroverts.
Join our team.
Sorry? Join the team.
Join our team.
Well, you know, it's very likely that I'm already part of the team, but you know, sometimes there's a lot of people who kind of force themselves to take on the extrovert role just because that's what they think is required of them. And I would definitely say I would put myself in that category, because a lot of what I guess you could say constitutes an introvert, I like. I prefer to train alone. I like running alone. I like reading alone. I like going for meals and to movies alone. I think a lot in my head. Like I contemplate a lot, right? And also, even though I am a very social person by necessity, it is exhausting. I find that it is exhausting, right? So like I'll fantasize about going on a vacation alone. I'll never do it because I got 3 kids and a wife, right? But, you know, I could do that. I could, if I had that opportunity, I could get on a plane, go sit on a beach with a book somewhere, right? And I would be completely content. I would not, I don't need to have, right, others around to be joyous or to have like, you know, to feel complete or to feel content, right? And so in that sense, I'm going to have to think about that a little more for myself. I don't know. Father Thomas, I don't know, what did you take away from our conversation today?
I just feel like a lot of the things that Father Jason said is, I agree with him. And that's how it was like I was speaking when it comes to the introvert stuff. You know, it's all stuff I identify with. And that's it.
Yeah. In some of our other episodes, Father Jason, if you listen to them, we have like not a running joke, but you know, a lot of times when I introduce the podcast and I say, oh, my co-host, Father Thomas, right? And Father Thomas is like notorious for giving like a one word response. Right. It's like, and then there's just like that awkward silence and the crickets. Right. And it's become, it's like a signature thing. That's how he is with everybody. Right. It's just like, how are you doing? Great. And that's it. Right. So it's, you know, it does outline a lot of what we've been talking about today. But I thank you, Father, for your thoughts and for coming on. I don't know if you had any final thoughts for us as well, kind of closing out the podcast.
Well, you know, I would just encourage people to go train. especially if they're an introvert, you know, and even if they're an extrovert. I think there's kind of a preconception of what it means to be someone who trains Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. But I would say probably some of the most authentic relationships I've had in my life have been with my training partners. And, you know, you develop a really deep trust with people out of necessity, because these are people who can hurt you if they do things incorrectly, or you can hurt them. And so you're put into this situation where you have to trust people. And at the end of the day, you have to be a gracious training partner, you know? And so I might not be the best blue belt in my gym, but I also try to be, you know, helpful to people who are new. And so a lot of times we might think, oh, I could just never do that. You know, that's just too difficult. But I would really encourage people to, even if it's not jiu-jitsu, if it's anything, you know, go to the gym, you know, sign up and take a CrossFit class, or, you know, something that if you've just had it in the back of your mind where you thought like, well, I'd really like to do this, a year from now, you're going to probably feel the same way. And you will have never had the opportunity to start that journey. And then if you do start the journey, you'll wish you would have started sooner. And if you never start the journey, then you'll probably regret it someday. And so choose the difficult thing.
Sure, sure. And to kind of go back to what we spoke about earlier, I wouldn't say get out of your comfort zone. I would say bring all these things into your comfort zone, you know?
Yeah.
And your comfort zone, full of things that you do, right? Bring it all in and incorporate it into your persona, because there's, I don't know, I think people are pretty resilient and adaptable. And I think we can find that a lot of things that we thought were not, you know, in agreement with us or our thing, you know, actually are. So,
yeah. And the other thing too, is that in jiu-jitsu, I think, you know, I've heard it described as a league of nerd assassins, you know, and I have never found people who train jiu-jitsu are my people. You know, there's just a lot of, we have this, you know, we think everyone in there is a UFC fighter, but I mean, I've had just as many talks about like comic books or movies or, you know, any other number of topics. It's like, you know, corny jokes abound. And so I enjoy the community aspect too. So if people are looking for community outside of what they normally do, then, you know, I would encourage them to look at a jiu-jitsu school, definitely.
Nice. Well, thank you very much for that, Father. We really appreciate you taking the time and taking the chance on us, not knowing who we are.
Thanks for having me.
Yes. Thanks for being here.
Yeah. And we look forward to maybe, you know, in the future, maybe we'll have you back on, or maybe when this whole pandemic goes away and we can do some traveling, we'll come down.
Yeah. I'd love to roll sometime. That would be great.
Yeah. Yeah. And we always say that it's like all our guests since we started this podcast during the pandemic. And it's like one day the borders open up.
Yeah.
And maybe we'll see each other in person. And we, that is definitely our prayer, you know, because we've made so many good friends over this time and met so many wonderful priests and also lay people, especially from the United States, because a lot of our guests have been from the United States. And it's just wonderful getting to know all of you down there. And we didn't even know there were so many Orthodox priests doing jiu-jitsu. We thought we were the only ones.
Yeah.
So that's just
like, I have another priest that I know who trains jiu-jitsu, if you're interested in his name.
You gotta send us a name. Okay. We can talk to him. Thank you, Father. God bless you and your ministry. And
thank you so much.
Us as well. We'll pray for you. And hopefully we'll see each other very soon.
All right. God bless you.
Take care.
You have been listening to The Fighting Priests, an independent podcast. Please follow us on Facebook and Instagram and let us know your thoughts. We'd love to hear from you. Till next time, keep training the body and the soul. God bless.